Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Weekly Podcast for the week of March 18th. I'm your host, William Liu. I'm joined on the line by Zarar.
What's going on?
And Sam.
Hey.
We just saw the Raptors lose to the Pistons for the third time this season. Dwayne Casey. Can you see? Can you feel the salt? Can you feel all the water evaporating near you? That man is happy.
The sun shines on a dog's ass. There's a saying that goes something like that, so I'm going to go with that one. The sun is shining on the Detroit Pistons and their shitty seventh seed. Let them soak it in. I hope we meet them in the playoffs so we can beat them and set this thing straight.
Wow.
I mean, it's pretty clear that he's holding up, you know, his comment from earlier in the month when he was saying that it's a championship pedigree franchise, whereas in Toronto, they have no idea. And it's in these games that you really see it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, only a champion would employ Zaza Pachulia. I mean, just look at the Warriors, right? Like, that's championship pedigree right there. I mean, look, I don't think we should overreact to anything there in terms of the Pistons game and getting swept by the Pistons. But I will say that the one positive out of this game that we just watched was Fred VanVleet finally coming back from injury. Missed about a month with that left thumb issue. Zara, where do you see Fred slotting into this team? Because he looked great tonight.
I see slotting him in place of Jeremy Lin. I remember when Lin got acquired, they you know, sometimes the Sportsnet calls me and goes, "Hey man, do you want to come on the radio or whatever?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." Hmm. So I got on, and I think the clip is in our SoundCloud, and they're like, "Oh, Linsanity returns." And I'm like, okay, calm down. Okay, this is not Linsanity. This is Jeremy Lin. You know, this is not circa 2006 Jeremy Lin. This is, you know, we're you know, it's 2019. So we should, you know, just temper our expectations. And I think we're seeing over the last couple of weeks how a struggling point guard can affect the team. So when Fred came in today, and I think he played about 30 minutes or so.
Yeah.
There was just a level of stability in the game that we just kind of had forgotten that existed in his absence. I think he does bring, I think that's the word, stability and a little bit of predictability in the offense. Yeah, he has his issues as well, and he makes mistakes like he did with that, pass to Kawhi, which even I saw, like, you know,
oh, yeah,
10 seconds before he made the pass, you knew it was going to get picked off because the defender was just lurching there. And you know, that's a bad pass by Fred, which, you know, hopefully he just puts that away. But overall, I'd say that, yeah, the stability definitely is welcome.
Sam?
Sorry, guys. For me, there's a bit of everything that he brings to the game. You can see people tweeting about it on the timeline while the game's going on, but there's a lot of little things for everybody to point out. And generally, they end up being a lot different. It could be how he's spacing the floor on offense, or like, Blake might mention that he doubles really well on defense, and he has, like, he's kind of a cure-all for the Raptors at times, and that's why he was so vaunted last year as a bench piece, because he improves the team in a lot of different ways with his shooting, his IQ, and his, like, pest-like defense, and just inserting that back into the lineup in any capacity is going to help. And since he played, like, a decent chunk tonight, that it obviously helped a lot, and it'll help a lot going forward.
Yeah, too bad he couldn't stop Ish Smith.
Hey, man. No Raptor ever has been able to stop Ish Smith, who, my God, he was good today. But
I think Ish Smith should be like an honorary member of the Gerald Henderson section of the Raptors Hall of Fame.
He should be that award title. Like, Gerald Henderson is now no longer in the league, so I'm actually really considering changing the title. But, I mean, going back to Fred, I think, you know, it's sort of, you could tell his effect on the rest of the team, like, really, in terms of just who connects the team, who makes everyone go, there's two guys on the team that does that. Obviously, Kyle Lowry is the number one guy. He's always been that guy for this team. And then last year, we saw Fred basically emerge as that type of connector last year. And you're seeing it today as well. Like, he like you guys said, he has his faults. Sometimes he thinks he's Kyrie Irving when he drives the basket, where he really is too short to finish. But that man really does a lot of good things for the Raptors, pushing the pace, shooting threes. I mean, the three-point shot is going to really help, because the Raptors are really going to need a lot of spot-up shooting out of their point guards. And I think in terms of the playoff rotation, if we look at, obviously Jeremy Lin's at this rate not going to make it, but Zarrar, who's in your playoff rotation, especially coming off the bench, because this bench unit has just been an issue.
Hey, man, before we get to that bench, whatever, like, yeah, we'll figure it out. But can we rename Fred VanVleet's name to, like, as you said, like, he connects a lot of things to, like, the dongle?
The dongle.
Like, would that be a good nickname for us, the dongle? Like, he's like a USB-C, USB iPhone, you know, you name it. He'll just connect everything because he's, like, the dongle.
That sounds mildly sexual.
But yeah, I know, that's why I kind of like it.
Oh, okay.
All right, sorry, playoff rotation. Okay, my bad.
I'll search the dongle. All right.
The dongle. Playoff rotation, I mean, isn't it kind of, like what's there to figure out? I mean, I think you got Powell, you got OG, you have Fred. I think that's your three off the bench, obviously. I mean, what else is there to figure out?
You got Juan Gasol or Ibaka, whoever's not starting that day coming off as well.
Yeah, I don't know what you can sort out there. I think we just have to be smarter in who we play when. And also, man, simply put, Gasol's got to hit his shots. I mean, he had a wide open three, which I think if he makes the game, we're talking about a different outcome. So, like, if he makes that three, what does that tell us? Does that mean it's a right move to start Gasol? It's just so difficult to say what your rotation should be, because it's moments in games that change games completely. And that three by Gasol today would have had a completely different outcome. I'm on the record saying I think I value continuity more than maybe other things. So I would definitely go with Ibaka as a starter, because I think Ibaka, as he's publicly said, enjoys starting. It actually matters to his productivity when he starts, because he's said so publicly. I think Gasol maybe can get you the same level of production both in a bench and a starter role. So I think if you're trying to see like if you're trying to maximize the output of your team, I'd say start Ibaka, just because he's more comfortable there. Beyond that, what the rotation should be, it's so matchup dependent that, the three guys I mentioned will probably be, you know, six to eight, but after that, it's just who plays when.
Okay, Sam, let me rephrase the question for you then. Do you feel like the bench struggles will solve themselves once the rotation gets trimmed down?
I think that a fair bit of them will solve themselves, and I do agree with Zarrar when he says that Gasol should probably be riding the bench, and especially since I know it's not exciting to have Jonas Valanciunas, DeLon Wright, and CJ Miles get traded for Marc Gasol, the former Defensive Player of the Year and former All-Star, and then have him come off the bench. But that probably is the way to go if you want to maximize everybody in that role, especially since he liberates Norman Powell, guys like Patrick McCaw in a lot of ways on offense. And I mean, I think it will sort a lot of itself out, especially since Fred VanVleet is like a catch-all superstar. He's a net rating superstar. He's a player that a lot of people like and a lot of people like to play with. And he's going to do a lot for the offense in that capacity. But as well as you're trimming a lot of the fat and you don't have to experiment as much anymore. And you can just kind of run with guys who are proven to be at least decent. And then every once in a while, if something calls for it, a la Norman Powell in the Pacers series, a young guy, an energetic defender that you want to bounce into the game, Patrick McCullough can come in and try and do something like that. But for the most part, I think the bench will do an okay job in the playoffs. I don't think it's going to be perfect. I don't think it's going to be last year's bench, but I think it'll be decent enough that the starters will play really well, obviously, I think. And I think that the bench will sort some of its problems out.
I think if we, like, if we struggle in the postseason, we're not going to look at, Norman Powell and say, oh man, we lost to the Bucks because of Norman Powell. No, we're going to say we lost because Gasol didn't perform or Lowry was like his usual playoff self or something else happened. I don't think it'll come down to just the bench being complete crap. I think there's enough depth on this team that it's going to be okay. And also, there's also a lot more playoff experience on this team. I think maybe that's what previous versions of the Raptors lacked a little. And this time you have that. So it's not a major, major concern to me. Like if you had to pick off a couple of concerns, it's like, if you look at our fourth quarter offense, man, Jesus, man, it's like give the ball to Kawhi and just get out of the way kind of deal. And he does get a high percentage look usually, much more so than DeRozan did, but still, I'm just not sure that's sustainable.
Yeah, and I think that's where you hope Gasol's passing and stuff like that can help the team. But if we break it down into, you know, let's say you want to stagger your lineups, right? And you want to have at least one of Gasol or at least one of Lowry, one of Leonard or one of Pascal in the lineup at all times. How do you break down those minutes? Because I think Nick Nurse so far has really liked to keep his best players together and play together as a unit and then overwhelm a team and then have his bench sort of buy time. At least that seems to be the general trend. But out of those three guys, I mean, we know Lowry can kind of do it, but how do you basically break down the rotation such that you always have one of those three guys in with the team to keep the team afloat?
Sam, I'll let you take this one.
Okay. It's a convoluted question. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot to be said for Pascal Siakam's, the type of shape he's in. He looks like he can go all day. You can actually, in the playoffs, if we're talking playoffs, you can bump up his minutes, and I would expect Pascal probably to be playing between 38 to 42 minutes per game, especially if it gets down to the nitty gritty, and that will end up curing a lot of those problems already. And Kyle Lowry plays a lot of minutes as well. You'll see that from Kawhi Leonard. And that's why you asked me if the bench is going to fix itself, if it's going to sort out some of its problems. Yes, and especially since it's going to be supplemented by these guys. And as far as building rotation off the dome, I can't like give you like four different five-man lineups, but I think that the playoff rotations get shortened. You're going to see an uptick in minutes from Leonard, Lowry, and Siakam. And that's just going to push the supplemented bench units into greater viability. And I don't think you're going to see a drop off in production when they're playing with other starters. As far as overwhelming the opposing starters, hopefully that the status quo remains. And hopefully like the supplemented bench is able to dominate other supplemented benches in the playoffs. But I think that the three guys like Gasol, one of Powell or OG and Fred VanVleet really make for the core of a bench unit that will play really well with the starters that play with it. And they'll play more minutes anyway. That's what I see.
Yeah, and I think where you're going with this is that, like, who's that, like, glue that kind of binds the starting unit and the bench unit together? It's that classic, like, 1-4 situation where you have, like, one guy from the starting lineup and four guys on the bench to kind of transition it through. And Lowry's been usually that guy, especially at the start of the fourth. You remember under Dwayne Casey and maybe even sometimes under Nurse. And, yeah, I think if you look at which current, like, starting player would be best suited to continue on playing with the bench, I'd say Lowry for sure. It's number one. But I think Sam's bang on. It's Siakam probably. Not even just because he has the talent, but it's because he has the energy to actually do that. Like if you put Kawhi in that role, you might risk just like burning him out and like leaving him like with nothing at the end of the game. But with Siakam, I find you can actually extend him and still retain productivity. So I think I'd say it's between those two. And if Ibaka starts, I'd say even a little bit of Ibaka because I think he's known to, you know, like his minutes have been fairly contained this year. I think like what's he averaging this year? I think is it 30, 32 or something like that? So you could probably extend him a little and still get away with it. So I'd say it's those two.
Yeah. Ibaka's at 28 this year. And a lot of that was because he's had to play extra minutes when JB was down and stuff. I honestly think if you have 48 minutes at center, you have Ibaka playing like 24 to 28, and then you have, you know, Gasol clean up the rest. Like, that's an ideal situation. And I think with those players at their current ages, like, I think it kind of maximizes both of them. Zerar, you talked about earlier in terms of just, you know, there's going to be more experience with this Raptors team, and that's going to be giving them an edge. Like, do you feel like the Raptors have a switch to flip in the playoffs? And, you know, outside of just, like, shortening the rotation and things like that, which everyone obviously is going to do, what is that switch for the Raptors?
That's a good question, man. I don't think there is a flip to switch other than them actually just playing together in the absence of random injuries or quote-unquote fake injuries or load management or precautions and so on. I think it's just – it's just the team playing together continuously is their edge. And that's why I think I wrote an article like a week ago where I was like, man, I like this load managed thing, big fan of it. But at this point, I think we got to get our continuity and enter the regular season in tip-top shape and playing maybe 15 games without any breaks. Or obviously you can't deal with the suspension for Ibaka. But other than that, I think like we got to get our guys playing playoff-type rotations in these last 10 games so that we have some sort of an edge and – quote unquote, get to the next gear for the postseason. So other than that, I think it's just that really. I don't think Nick Nurse has this like, ooh, this little playbook he's got on the side, which he's yet to open up.
Apparently he's hinted at that.
No, he's not. If he has, then it's a dumb idea to like hang on to plays and just test them out in like the last 10 games of the season. Like if he's actually doing that, I think that's, he should be canned.
He's got his own CJ Miles on Kevin Love.
Oh my God!
Trick in the back pocket.
Yeah. Tyler Hansbrough and Paul Pierce.
Yeah. Oh my God! Oh, Dwayne, how could you be bitter, Dwayne? You got slept in 3 or 4 years, man.
Oh Jesus!
Oh man, Bebe in Game 2 of the Cavs series.
Yeah.
Okay, Sam. What about you? What do you think the Raptors will, in terms of just flipping the switch? What does that look like for the Raptors for you?
Occasionally a more aggressive and persistent for his own offense, Marc Gasol. Hopefully some magic that Norman Powell can conjure up. And, better Fred VanVleet, considering that he didn't play very well in the playoffs last year because he had that nagging injury going into it. Kyle's been pretty good in the playoffs, in recent memory. At least I think so. I know that's a hot button topic. And Kawhi Leonard is incredible. I mean, he's a dude. He's a finals MVP, and he's one of the best players in the league, even if he has been load managing. And if we want to save him for when we sign him to a max contract, you know, you can load manage him during the playoffs. It's the long game. Everybody would appreciate that. But I think that there's all the pieces there. And if they're meant to be a team that's going to be good, then you'll see those players, the aforementioned, deliver in more meaningful ways, and especially Siakam. There's just a lot of different ways the Raptors can play, which has added variance to their offense, whereas the Raptors in regular seasons past have just been pick and roll, pick and roll, pick and roll, Lowry, DeRozan. And that was a problem in the playoffs, but was really good during the regular season. You'll see it with the Portland Trail Blazers as well. I mean, continuity is really important in the regular season, the Pacers too. But in the playoffs, having a variant offense that can go a lot of different ways, you can do Siakam, having his own type of post-up, run-out offense. He can even ISO on occasion. You have Leonard's offense, which is a whole other thing. You have Gasol's type of offense, the elbow touches, and you have Lowry. Yep. I think that there's a lot to wean from what they've done, and hopefully they build on it and mix it in a meaningful way, which is a nurse question for all that he's been so far.
What do you think? Is there a defensive switch we can go up a level for the postseason? Because you look at the game in the game tonight, man, 58 points for Detroit in the paint. Is there something on the defensive end we can do which will take us maybe to the next level?
I keep thinking so, but I just think the Raptors, they just aren't focused. Maybe that's it. Maybe they just focus to play defense because we've seen them play defense for great stretches and it's fine. And overall, they're a good defensive club, but I honestly find that, like, to be honest, I think both offensively and defensively, the switch is probably just Kawhi Leonard, right? Like, Kawhi, let's be honest, he hasn't played full capability defense, full energy defense all season. He really hasn't. It's been a couple of games that he's had against Jimmy Butler, against, you know, Ben Simmons, and occasional other examples. But, I mean, like, for the most part, Kawhi Leonard, there's been, like, the not off the court, you know, load management, and there's been on-the-court load management. And on-the-court load management has just him playing less defense. And I think if he turns it up to where basically he's ready to play defensive player of the year style defense again, that is our playoff switch. Like, just, you know, defensively, just he alone could be so disruptive. And we haven't necessarily seen that consistently. And even offensively, man, this guy's last playoff run, Kawhi Leonard averaged 27.7 points per game on 52.5% shooting, 45.5% shooting from the three, and also 93% from the free throw line and 8.5 attempts per game. That's a 67 true shooting percentage. So maybe that's, I think honestly Kawhi is basically the entire playoff switch, right? If he decides to play defense and stops resting all the time, like that's it.
So you're saying if you got a chance against the Pistons, I like it.
I mean, it'll be tough, man. Can he guard Ish Smith? That's the question. Okay, so in terms of the first round then, looking ahead, it's still a couple of weeks until the actual playoffs start, but, you know, who are you hoping to avoid the most in terms of first round matchups? Or are we kind of just past that as a Raptors team?
I hope we're past that. Like, I really do. I like, if we're worried about, you know, whether it's going to be Miami or Brooklyn or Detroit, then, oh my God, then we have like bigger issues. Just between, like, I think I'm still going to go, if I had to pick an easy first rounder, I'd still go for the Nets. I don't know. I just think, you know, they've had a couple of good games against us, but I still feel they're a young team. Who still has like a few years to go of like playoff misery before they even win a series. So yeah, I'd go with the Nets. I think more experience. I think they have less experience. Yeah, D'Angelo Russell can be terrifying sometimes, but I think that's kind of where it slows down for them.
It's a Nets for me as well, obviously, because Serge Ibaka has actually played Jarrett Allen really well across the board this year. Mm. He's limited him in a lot of areas, which kind of takes out one whole part of the game. And, you know, it's to get back to that idea that the Raptors haven't been a team that we can reliably say they'll get better in the playoffs going forward. And like Gerard alluded to, if we're worried about a first round matchup, that's a problem. And I don't think we are, and I don't think we should be, because like there should be an uptick in everybody's game, in most everybody's game. And I think a version of the Raptors that's playing well shouldn't be worried about the Pistons, Nets, or the Heat. I don't think it should ever matter. And if it does, that's a problem, like Zarar said.
Okay. Well, okay, I'll flip it another way then. Objectively speaking, one of these teams is going to take the biggest chunk out of the Raptors. One of them is going to be the most annoying team to face. Is that team the Pistons? Because I think it is. I think the Pistons actually give the Raptors a couple of problems. Not to win the series, but I think Blake is a real issue for Pascal. Like, I don't want to see Pascal play like 80 full games, you know, going all out, and then have to play Blake Griffin in a grueling 6-game series, and then also then have to go guard Giannis on the Bucks. Like, as for a guy that has a lot of energy, that's almost an insane amount of energy for anyone to be expending. And I feel like the Pistons, you know, I think the Raptors will beat the Pistons, but, you know, that team, I could see the Raptors, you know, losing some energy after playing the Pistons. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I agree with that. It's, Andre Drummond presents his own problems. Yeah. And like you alluded to, Pascal there's only a few power forwards in the league that will kind of take it at Pascal because the game isn't really played that way anymore. But Blake Griffin is one of them. And considering that Ish Smith is one of those guards who to other teams is not a problem, but against this team, he's a menace, like a small bouncy guard can just move in and out of the pick and roll, he'll snake it, he'll dump off, all those types of things. I agree with you. I could see that being like a stupid, painful to watch 6-game series that we just hate. And I think as far as the matchup with Pascal that you hit on, that's the big problem because that's their star player. And if he has a mismatch, which he would have most times down the floor, then it's just going to be painful to watch. And there's not very many fixes on the Raptors roster for that thing. There's not much of a scheme because Blake is a really good passer, and you just kind of have to deal with it at that point, whereas the other teams can be schemed around, and the Raptors have more inherent matchup problems for the other team, whereas the Pistons have more inherent matchup problems for the Raptors.
Yeah, I think Detroit's the obvious one. There's also the psychological factor of, like, getting swept, which maybe plays with some of the players, so I would you know, it's weird because I kind of want to see us face the Pistons just because I think it'll be a good series and it's going to have a backdrop of the Casey thing. So I'm looking forward to a Pistons series, and if sign me up for one. But in terms of like the one matchup that may actually bite us in the ass and can give us trouble, it's also the Pistons. But at the same time, that's not deterring me from wanting the Pistons, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I hear you. Honestly, in terms of as people that cover the team and stuff, it's way more interesting if we play the Pistons. The storylines are going to be way better than if
yeah, exactly.
It'll be like Damari Carroll being, you know, saying stuff about the Raptors locker room versus Dwayne Casey. You know, I think there's a real chance Dwayne Casey fights Nick Nurse during that series, and I really want to see it, man. I really want to see
it. I guess, do those two just hate each other? Like, is that what it is? I mean, because I've been reading some articles here and there, like, you know, some comments back and forth, but whatever. Like, that was like 4 or 5 months ago. Like, I feel like those two absolutely despise each other. Will, what do you know? You got some connections on the inside.
I don't know anything, but I do know that it's very obvious that Dwayne Casey is very bitter and salty about the whole thing, and I think from Dwayne's perspective, I think he feels like Nick probably didn't back him up. When, you know, obviously after last year, the Raptors got swept. And by the way, as Dwayne Casey himself said, they got swept in a better way. It wasn't as bad. It wasn't as bad as 2017. It was a better sweep, alright? You know, that if JV's tip goes in game one, that whole series could have changed. They could have lost in 5 instead of 4, but, I just think that, yeah, he feels a little bit backstabbed.
What does that mean he didn't back him up? Like, has there ever been a case where a GM is about to fire the head coach, but the assistant coach steps in and goes, nah, I gotta back up the head coach here and save his job. I just don't think that happens. So I don't know what Gacy's expecting of Nurse. If I'm Nurse and I got offered a head coaching job, you don't say no to that, because that's as an assistant coach, that's your dream.
Yeah, of course. Of course. But I mean, I don't know. Specifics, I'm not quite sure. But I mean, like, there's history. There's a history. I don't know what Dwayne said after this game, but after the last one about how the Pistons are a championship organization and the Raptors aren't. And then before that, it was, man, I know all Nick Nurse's plays. Like, you know, it's the same playbook. He's running the same plays as me. Like, he said he clearly just doesn't respect Nick at all. And it's really funny to watch because I think the Raptors feel some sort of like karmic debt into Dwayne the same way they kind of feel towards DeRozan. And so like they can't actually come out and just say like, hey, listen, we fired you for a reason. But like I think it just puts Nick in a bad spot. He basically just has to win. And even if he does win, he won't even get any credit for it because he just has a better team. So.
And I would like to add that in the 3 games you lost to them, in the second and third one, we had players missing. Obviously Ibaka for this one and Lowry, and before that we didn't have Leonard. Mm-hmm. And in the first game we lost, which you lost 106-104, I must say, like, we have to call this one out, is that, like, we did not play Lorenzo Brown. So there's an asterisk on that
one.
Yeah,
that's, listen, Lorenzo Brown is, by the way, probably a better player than Jeremy Lin at this point.
How do you feel about that, about Will? Did you have any high hopes of Jeremy Lin, and which have been subsequently shattered, or is this what you kind of expected?
All right, let me set the record straight on Jeremy Lin, okay? Coming into the season, in 51 games with Atlanta, he was averaging 11 points a game, shooting 47% from the field, 33% from deep. You know, that wasn't great. But he was doing a decent enough job. His plus minus metrics were good. And the times I watched, honestly, Trae Young just didn't know how to play point guard early in his career. Obviously, he's turned it around. But for a long time there, Jeremy was the best point guard in Atlanta, and he was doing a good job. And I thought, wow, this guy could really contribute. Upon landing in Toronto, all that has changed. His shooting percentage has dropped 10 percentage points. His three-point percentage went from 33 to 15. And it honestly feels like 3%. Like, I feel like I remember every single three he's hit as a Raptor, which is just, it shouldn't be that way. But, it's been disappointing, and I don't think his game fits. I just think he wants to play pick and roll in an up-tempo style, and the Raptors have really worked into this half-court, type of game. He's not getting a lot of pick and roll opportunities. He's not really confident in terms of obviously shooting the ball. He's never been that good of a shooter. And it's really weighing on him how badly he's shooting the ball right now. And unless he's driving to the basket and creating his own offense, he's not really creating offense because he's also not a very good passer. So it's just awkward all around, man. It's awkward all around. But he's a good teammate, and I'm sure he's going to love the city of Toronto, so he's going to be a great CJ Miles.
The Hawks thing, I mean, that's the difference between playing for a team that's, what, fourth worst in the conference and a team that's number two. Like, you can afford to people will let you take shots and not play as hard defense on you than if you're playing for the Hawks as you are for the Raptors. And I think that's kind of showing. I mean, I think we know this, right? I mean, the Raptors have over the years have had players who have, Bashaun Leonard, you know, is the oldest one. You know, the guy who cost us LeBron James. I mean, we have, our history is littered with guys who did amazing when in seasons that didn't count. And, and Jeremy Lin is basically that for the Hawks. And now that he's on a good team, he's struggling. But Sam, thoughts on Jeremy Lin, dude? Like, is this par for the course? Is it kind of what you expected
I got a lot of crap because I did that mailbag and I said that VanVleet was going to eat up all of Jeremy Lin's minutes, and I didn't have any complaints about any other answer except for that one. There seemed to be these lofty expectations that maybe he might even supplant VanVleet, and I was like, well, man, I don't know. VanVleet's pretty good. But Lin, there's a spot for Lin on this team. Like Lou said, there's not much of a – or, sorry, William Lou said, hey, Lou, how you doing over there? but like he said, the up-tempo way he likes to play isn't a direct fit. And he just has to be kind of like a specialty option that, like, if things are really slogging out there and maybe he finds a way that, like, he's breaking down a certain scheme, a certain group of players on the opposite team in the pick and roll, which we've seen probably two or three times in his time with the Raptors, is that he finds the pace with which he wants to play the pick and roll and he gets to his spots. That's still, there's value in that, and he can still do that. And you could go to Kenny Atkinson and ask about his defensive intensity, and that could be good as well. But there's a place in that. If you plug him in every once in a while, see if he can get his pick and roll game going, and if it's helpful, you let him run with it. Maybe he plays 15 to 18 a game. If he doesn't, maybe he plays 6. And I think that's his role. That's what he's going for the Raptors going.
Yeah, it's been disappointing. I really thought he'd be an upgrade over DeLon, just offensively at least, because he has shown more than what DeLon has. But nah, I mean, it's been disappointing. Let's wrap up the first half of the podcast. Let's look ahead to the schedule next week. The Raptors play the Knicks tomorrow at home on a back to back. By the way, did you guys see Mario Hezonja blocking LeBron James at the buzzer? Yeah. What's going on, man? If only we had Mario Hezonja all these years, we would have gone past Cleveland.
And he dunked on Giannis. So Giannis and LeBron, he got both of them.
Jesus Christ, apparently. Yeah.
I don't like the look down from like a player of that ilk at LeBron James.
That's hilarious, though.
Yeah, oh man, it's so funny. Especially since his hair looks like it has like 80 pounds of grease in it. Like he looks like a fine-tuned Charlie Chaplin on the court. And it's just funny to see, man, but especially since like he'll go three games without playing any minutes, but he's staring down LeBron. I mean, it's funny.
I just love how, you know, the Knicks, first of all, that happened in Madison Square Garden. Everybody's watching, and the Knicks never even bothered sending any sort of double team.
Nothing.
And he just did it on his own, and he almost got the rebound himself basically after the block. So yeah, good on him, man. I remember there's some GM, or I don't know, it was on Twitter somewhere, and they asked some like other players on like what they think of like LeBron missing the playoffs, and they're like, you know what, it's good for him. Like, he needs to be humbled a little bit. I think he needs to see the other side of the NBA, because he's always been like constantly going to the NBA finals, and now he's out of the playoffs. Maybe some perspective can help. And I think, what did you guys think of that whole report that the Lakers were looking to ship LeBron? Like, is that true? Like,
no.
Because the reporter did have a blue tick next to his name, which always confuses me.
No, I'm pretty sure what happened was, I know exactly what happened. So, Jeff Van Gundy talked about it. On a broadcast, you know, just randomly, he just sort of brought it up. He's like, hey, man, what if the Lakers trade LeBron? And then I think there was another report from Rick Bucher, who's not necessarily reputable in terms of reporting. You know, he's not a Woj, for example, right? But, no, they're not trading LeBron, man. Like, it's just, they're not. Like, I think we're overreacting a little bit. LeBron's still averaging, like, 27, 7, and 7. You know, he's clearly not as good as he used to be, but, like, he's still in his prime. He's honestly the best thing the Lakers have going for them. And And I think there's also other ramifications when it comes to trading LeBron, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's not even just about basketball. Like, does Magic Johnson want to make an enemy out of LeBron post-career? You're going to be that team that trades LeBron, you know?
Yeah. Sorry, to answer your question.
Yeah, Knicks.
I think the Knicks have already just picked up their monthly win, so we're good.
Yeah, I'd say that's a win.
Trading LeBron would be like, oh my god, I can't even phrase it how funny that would be though. Especially since Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has like a no trade clause, but LeBron doesn't, and seeing one of them go out the door, not the other. Especially since like KCP, like, couldn't even play visiting game, or like road games the other season. Like, just seeing like, that juxtaposition of their careers, that the Lakers are like, now we gotta roll with KCP, both from clutch. Well, LeBron, we gotta get you out of here, man. And like, LeVar Ball reemerges.
Oh my god.
Of Lakers fandom.
It's so clear, by the way.
LeBron was the problem all along.
It was so clear that LeBron paid off LeVar, by the way. Have you guys noticed? Like, LeVar was so loud last year. So, like, in the media every single day. And then LeBron shows up, and all of a sudden he's completely quiet. You know? That can't be a coincidence. That can't be. You know, LeBron's got like 500 pairs of BBB at home.
Definitely.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, the next game, that's a win. Then the Raptors play a home-on-home against the Thunder. Wednesday, they play on the road in OKC, and then Friday, they return home back to Scotiabank. Give me your prediction for those.
It's home-and-home against OKC.
Yeah. Super random.
Yeah, it's like a 1-1. I'll take a cop out answer of 1-1.
Okay.
Just because it just makes sense. It's just hard to see. You know, I think we've always struggled in Oklahoma, haven't we? Generally, we struggle there.
They're a good team. Last year, I think the Raptors got swept by the Thunder. I just remember Russell Westbrook and Steven Adams just killing the Raptors in pick and roll. Like every single possession down, they would score.
This is an ESPN game, which should be noted. It's on national TV in the States at 9:30 p.m. So, lots of eyes on this one. If I had to pick which one we'd win, I'd say, you know, I hope we win the one that's away to OKC. I think that's more of a statement game. And I'm guarantee you there's going to be some load management here between the two, I would imagine.
Wow.
I hope that they win the game in Toronto because I'll be at that game. So,
okay. Yeah, there you go. And then the Raptors play one more game on the weekend, Sunday, against the Hornets. 6 p.m., the game everyone's waiting for, Raptors-Hornets. I mean, I think, honestly, at this point, the Hornets are not the same. They don't present the same issues with the Raptors as they used to. They used to be a pain in the ass, but Steve Clifford's gone, and he took his, you know, magic over to, you know, the I guess Orlando, the Magic. But, yeah, I mean, this is a win. This is a win.
It's also a back to back for Charlotte because they play Boston the night before, so should be noted. So I think that's a win.
I hope they go all out and beat Boston.
Daryl Henderson doesn't play for them anymore, which is that's another wrinkle.
That's a big one. That's a big one. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we're gonna empty out the mailbag.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers, and you know what makes me mad? When insurance companies deny your claim for no good reason. That's why people call me. I'm the lawyer insurance companies don't want to deal with. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you.
All right, welcome back to the second half of the Raptors Weekly Podcast. You're here with Sam and Zarar. We're taking your Twitter questions. As always, hit us up at Raptors Republic. First one comes from Sahal. Dwayne Casey has been the source of multiple losses this season. Is it time to fire him? Yikes.
Sal's a cheeky son of a bitch, isn't he? He's always coming with these comments.
With that big forehead of his, he's coming up with these jokes. I will say that, do you buy that Dwayne Casey knows Nick Nurse's playbook inside out?
I'm sure he knows some of it. I mean, he probably didn't overhaul the whole thing, but I don't know if it matters. I feel like most coaches know most of what else is going on in the league. I'm not sure that plays like a very big factor into it.
Do you feel like Dwayne is in Nick Nurse's head?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I think Sam's bang on. I don't think it matters as much on there's no secretive plays you can run at this point, right? Maybe a couple wrinkles here and there, but overall, you know, 80% of the time, you kind of have a decent idea what the team's going to do. And I don't think Dwayne Casey can actually coach the Pistons to watch out for the Raptors are doing. I just don't have enough faith in the guy. So even if he, even if Nick Nurse ran the exact same plays as Dwayne Casey did in his time, I just don't think Dwayne Casey would have the coaching talent to coach his team to watch out for those plays. I know it's a very cynical view of Casey, but that's my take. And what was the other thing? Is it, in the head? Yeah, I think so. I think a little bit.
Yeah, in the back of Nick Nurse's mind, you know he hates losing to Dwayne.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, can you imagine? Like, in any profession, if you're like a cashier and you got fired by the new cashier, I don't know, man. Yeah. There's always going to be something there. And
you because I remember watching in the Cavs series, they ran like the same elevator play four times in a row when Dwayne Casey was coach, and there was no difference. It was just another triple. So I feel like if there's a capability to like be like, okay, I know this play, we're going to run it, we're going to stop it, it would have happened, but it didn't.
You know, the one surefire way to beat Dwayne Casey is if you hire Jason Kidd. So, you know, he's available, guys. He's available. There's time. We can still hire Jason. Oh, man. All right, next one. This one from Cooper. How dominant do you think playoff Kawhi is? I mean, the guy doesn't look like he's trying too hard. This is a question I have in the back of my mind as well. I don't think there's a doubt about his ability, but in terms of just can he go from playing at 50% energy and load management like once or twice a week to 40, 42 minutes every single game in the playoffs and play great defense and offense? Is that possible for you guys in your mind?
Do you guys think Kawhi is nursing an injury? Or of any sort, or discomfort of any sort?
I think he knows that if he pushes too hard, he will aggravate his quad.
Even now?
Yeah.
Okay, then you kind of answered your own question then, didn't you?
So you're saying no?
Well, like if you believe that that's the case, and we're going to ask him to play 42 minutes and push hard in the playoffs, well, guess what? That quad's getting aggravated in game one.
All right. All right, I'm going to knock on wood just for the three of us right here and the whole entire fan base. But, I mean, yeah, to some degree, that's why I have some doubts, right? Like, I'm not entirely sure you can do it. Even, like, one or two games, I would like to see him. Like, if he went all out against OKC for some random reason, and I'm like, holy crap, he's playing 42 minutes. He's, Paul George is shooting 8 of 25 again, and Kawhi is giving you 30. Like, I'm like, yeah, okay. That's great. Then there's the switch, but I'm not entirely convinced, you know? I think there is a risk factor that goes into it.
Man, I hope he has it, cause like, Raptors fans have been getting lampooned on for like 5 years about like, nobody doing as well in the playoffs, that we really do deserve a player who's much better in the playoffs, and like, be it Gasol or Leonard. I hope that Leonard plays a lot better. Mm. I hope that we see like, shades of just like, him robbing Andrew Wiggins on the sideline like two times in a row and just clamping people down. You have to be optimistic, I think. Otherwise, this all gets pretty hairy and like dark right away.
Yeah, that's why I feel the biggest, you know, the first question you asked in this podcast was like, is what the next gear is? And I just feel the gear is everybody playing together. That's why when I see games like this today, which had a bit of a, Maybe not an emotional aspect to it or whatever, but it meant something. You didn't want to get swept by the Pistons. I would love to see Lowry, Leonard, like everybody just go at it in this game and kind of win this one just to set a bit of a tone. And I feel with like how many games do we have left now, like 15 or something like that? I mean, when are we going to get that momentum that says this is the Raptors heading into the postseason? Or are we going to find our postseason form in games one and two? It just feels... My gut tells me like we've left it a little too late to get our feel going.
Yeah, I think honestly the Fred injury and stuff like that and the trades did set them back a little bit, but I agree. I mean, like they have a couple of games left. It's just the tricky thing is like the last couple of games here are such trash games outside of the OKC games. They don't play anyone over 500. The schedule is just ass. So. Or maybe they do play some 500 teams, but, like, nobody good. Like, literally nobody respectable. So it would have been nice to see. Another one from Film Apothecary. Heard Nick Nurse in the postgame. Should we be nervous that he's still saying he hasn't figured out the rotation yet?
Yeah, For sure. Like, yeah. we just talked about it. Yeah. 100% we should be a little nervous. I mean, the trade happened in what, Feb? Yeah. I think we have had time to kind of adjust and figure out who plays where. We haven't done that yet. I think we've left it a bit too late. I don't know. Sam, what do you think?
I don't think it's too late. I think, well, more so than you, I guess. I have faith, not so much in Nick Nurse, but I think that the players play will help make it apparent to him in the playoffs, like, who should be playing. Because I do think that this is a team now that will have, at least if not a huge switch, at least a moderate switch to flip. And I think that the play of certain players will make it really apparent to him that there's certain lineups he should play, because there's a lot of talent and there's like four guys, maybe five guys who you know just have to be in there. And then like you just need two or three other guys to step up, at least in some capacity, to make it clear who the eight guys are. And then mixing and matching from there, it shouldn't be too complicated. I mean, you play Pascal a lot. You play Leonard a lot. Otherwise, like, if this is a quad injury that lingers for like the rest of his career, then, you know, I guess he either risks it and re-injures it, or he just doesn't play to his full capacity ever again. And then at that point, it's like Giannis is beating the Raptors. So, I mean, you just have faith that like better players are going to play better, and that Nick Nurse will use at least some of his brain, his apparent offensive genius brain, to figure out who should play. That's the thing.
Yeah, this idea that Nick Nurse is a mad scientist who has all these crazy ideas, I feel like that's kind of been debunked a little bit, man. There's no mystique at all when it comes to Nick Nurse. This guy has, and also it's the one sneaky thing with Nick is just like, because I think he's a rookie rookie coach and stuff, so I don't think referees care about him at all. So like, if he ever gets like a tech or whatever, like, it's not like the Raptors get the next three calls, like the way, you know, even Dwayne would get that. Dwayne would definitely get that. He'll get a tech and then all of a sudden the Raptors would get a couple of nice calls. Or like Doc Rivers would do that, or like Popovich would do that, or whatever, Spoelstra. It's not the same. It's not the same. I don't think Eric Lewis is listening to Nick Nurse after he gets a technical, but,
do you guys remember, maybe you don't, but, the same way we're saying like Nick Nurse, offensive genius, we used to call like Kevin O'Neill way back when, like a defensive guru. We got him from the Pistons. He was an assistant coach there. He was this crazy looking dude who was like, who became the Raptors head coach. And basically he just killed the pace where we took like, I don't know, 35 shots a game. And everybody was like, oh, genius. Like, because he's a defensive, oh, the Raptors are amazing. No, like, we sucked. And we got fired after a year or whatnot, and that was the end of it. Like, I don't think Nick Nurse is obviously anywhere close to Kevin O'Neill on the offensive side, but there is a bit of a halo effect going on here where we look at Nick Nurse maybe as in a more saintly light than we need to. And now that he's actually had some real challenges hit at him with the trades giving him more options and injuries forcing him to think a little outside the box, we're seeing that at the end of the day, he's a rookie head coach trying to figure things out.
Yeah. Yeah. And for a season where you're going all in, it is a little bit unfortunate, really, for him to get this chance at this very pivotal moment. Most new coaches, you know, get a chance to work with a new team with no expectations. But,
Does Masai fire Dwayne Casey if he knows that Kawhi Leonard is coming?
I mean, okay, the real question we should really be asking is, if Kawhi Leonard was already on the Raptors when Mike Budenholzer was a free agent coach, would he have picked the Raptors over the Bucks? Because I feel like if Bud wasn't coaching the Bucks are just not what they are. And all of a sudden, you know, you have an established coach in Mike Budenholzer and a player in Kawhi that he's familiar with going back to their days with the Spurs. I mean, wouldn't the Raptors be far and away the best team in the East if that had happened? Because at the time, he was like, I can either coach Giannis and Chris Middleton or Colin DeMar. And he was like, yeah, I'm good, guys. I'm going to Milwaukee. You know?
Yeah, I could see that.
But if it was Kawhi and Kyle, he'd probably be like, yeah, you know what? I'll probably stay here.
Wait. Are you saying that you would rather coach Kawhi than coach Giannis?
Yeah, I think so. Kawhi plus the fact that you have, at the time, it looked like a better supporting cast. And also at the time, I mean, not at the time, just generally, you'd probably rather live in Toronto than Milwaukee. It's a bigger market. They're probably offering a little bit higher salary and stuff.
But it's so cold in Toronto.
Yeah.
It can't be.
You're just like cold and eating cheese in Milwaukee or whatever. Like that's not ideal. I don't know. I feel like he could have chosen the Raptors if he knew Kawhi was already here. But at the time, it was literally Kyle and DeMar versus Giannis and Middleton, and he obviously made the right choice. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he gets to attach himself to Giannis for like the foreseeable future, which star players, if they're not like prima donnas, genuinely help coaches like resumes a lot. Like Eric Spoelstra is a good coach, but like having LeBron come through like really puts him up in the upper echelon as far as his career goes. And Budenholzer can probably do a similar type of thing with like taking himself to Giannis.
I'd also feel that I mean there's only a 3-year gap between the two, and you know, as a coach, you're probably looking at a player who will listen to you more and you can mold more. And I think that age factor plays a lot there, because 3 years does, even though it's not a lot, I think it still makes a difference in a player's mentality and how much they listen to their coach and how much they think they already know everything. And I'm not saying Kawhi acts like he knows everything, but that would play a big factor in any coach selecting which superstar they want to play with. Because ultimately, man, the coach's job, he gets fired or has success because his superstar is listening to him. And if that's not happening, the guy has no chance. Maybe that's like one of the factors he has to look at.
Mm. And Giannis is signed. He's on the contract.
That is true. Okay. Next question from Tim. Are Raptors fans the most panicky, worrisome fan base in the league? I would say very close, because this is a tortured existence. You know, like there's a lot of reason why people are the way they are. They're not just panicking because they're, you know, Chicken Little fans. It's literally the Raptors are the Chicken Littles, and you're watching that happen over and over again. You're like, so what's going on here? You know?
I think that the Raptors, we have Chicken Little fans for sure. And like obviously every fan base does. But I think that there's like a little bit of self-awareness to the Chicken Little aspect that I appreciate. And if you're ever worried about the Raptors, at least when I was like 17 and reading blog sites, I would go to the opposite team's blog, like, and go read comments. And like, if you read a Celtics blog comment section after a loss, like, they don't even get it, man. Like, they're way more panicky and they'll throw everybody on their bus. It's like the place is on fire. Like, every fan base has an aspect of that. But I actually, like, at least on Twitter, I think there's a bit of self-awareness. This is elitist, by the way. Cut me out of the pot right now. I'm an elitist. But there's like an aspect of self-awareness to the Raptors' Chicken Little syndrome. You know, it's funny. You make fun of it.
Mm.
Yeah, I think if you look at the Knicks sometimes, I mean, the Knicks suck, but what I like about the Knicks fans is that they've been crap for so long that it's become almost humorous. Like their comment sections and their sites are just funny. I mean, they've accepted it. But no, I think the Celtics is a pretty good call out. Like even Philly for that matter, their fans panic and they feel, you know, they have it owed to them. Like once they got Jimmy Butler, like they felt that was it. And, when they started struggling after that, you should have seen some of the, some of the comments on their blogs. But hey, man, nothing compares. Stepping aside the league, over the last couple of days, man, yesterday Man U losing to Wolves and today Chelsea to Everton. If you check out the Reddit sections on those two teams' posts, like you will know what panic looks like. Like it does not compare to what the Raptor fans are doing in our section.
No creativity in the final third. No,
exactly.
No runs were made.
Yeah, there are levels. Like the NBA is, I'd say, on the lower levels of like fans hitting the panic button and just reacting in weird ways. Like, all you got to do is look at the Prem and go, yeah, that's panic.
Yeah,
Knocker's on another level, man.
We don't have Raptors fan TV.
Yeah.
Okay, next one from Parmveer. When do you think the NBA will get an expansion team, and when/what year do you think it's a possibility Vancouver will get it again?
Isn't it Seattle before Vancouver? Are we still with that theory or what?
I think so. I don't think the NBA wants to do expansion. I think they like the NBA being, like, so many teams being good. You know what I mean? I don't think they want to dilute the product.
And why Vancouver? I mean, I don't...
Just because they had it before.
Yeah, but I don't know. That's not a good reason. I put Montreal ahead of them.
Really?
Yeah, why not?
You know, players like don't want to come to Toronto because it's cold. They want to go to Montreal.
What?
And they're gonna be afraid of the language and stuff like that.
Weather is your only factor. That's true. Sure.
They're gonna be, you know, NBA players are babies, right? Like, they don't even want to go through customs, and then they're gonna see like West, like with the OU, and they're gonna freak out. They're really gonna be like, no, I'm demanding a trade. I'm headed est. You know, like
if you had a language barrier along with like not California weather, I don't see that being successful.
Yeah,
but it's also it's a Canadian guy on Twitter probably asking a question, so I guess that's probably why it's Vancouver. He's like, when are we getting a second Canadian team? Because, I mean, more Canadian teams would be fun for just the idea of it. But I think Seattle comes before because there's definitely this idea that Seattle is owed something, especially since Kevin Durant-led team left their city. So I think it'd be them before Vancouver.
And Vegas, I'd say, is ahead of them too.
Man. Yeah, I think if the NBA does expand, it's like Seattle and then Vegas, and then you put those in the West, and then you move two teams from the West, or one of the teams from the West into the East, and then you have a balance, like 16-16. Yeah. And it's probably going to be like Minnesota or Memphis comes over to the East or something.
I think it's if the NBA wants to take this game global, Canada is not your next stop for expansion. It's maybe something else. I mean, I'm just thinking out of the box. Maybe it's like somewhere in Europe or like London or something like that. Or maybe Mexico or something. I don't know.
Yeah, they talked about like Mexico City as a potential like G League spot and they want to dip their toe in the water. But I'm like, hey, you got to get visas and like, I mean, again, like it's the same Montreal problem. Yeah, there's going to be a wall now. Like, yeah.
As a guy who lives in Mexico, they don't deserve a team because they don't count three-pointers when they play pickup ever.
What? Wait, hold on. You live in Mexico?
Yeah, he lives in Mexico. You didn't know that?
Oh, no, I didn't know that. That's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But dude, who counts threes in pickup? Oh, you mean threes as twos, you mean? Oh, okay.
One, yeah.
And wait, so, everything's a one?
And they only cleared outside the paint.
What the fuck is this?
It's devil. It's the devil's basketball.
What the fuck
is horrible.
This?
And so what it is like, if you even shoot from outside, you're out of order to like play defense because everybody just hangs out near the paint. And then if you take an outside shot, they already have like inside position on you. It's horrible.
So it's like everybody's Jerry West and Dolph Shays.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I wrote an article, like, you probably didn't see it, but I wrote an article where I interviewed, like, the guys who I played basketball with, and they hated everybody except for Serge and Jonas. They were just like, give the big guys the ball. They're so close to the basket.
Oh, God.
I was like, man. Like, and none of them liked Kyle Lowry. They're like, he's small. Look, big men. And they referenced their own basketball. They're like, hey, listen. Look, the big guys here, they score lots of baskets. It's the same in the NBA. I was like, dog, okay. Like,
wow.
So no NBA team for them. They don't get it. Not until they start counting, the threes as twos and twos as ones. That's how it's gotta be.
No, I mean, I didn't know about the you gotta clear it outside the paint. As soon as they can shot, the guys got the rebound and inside position. That's great.
If they grab the rebound, they just go straight back up and they like all start clapping and be like, hell yeah, dog. I'm like, what? It's so cheesy to me. Anyway,
oh,
I digress.
So no Vancouver. No Vancouver. and no Mexico City either. All right.
So let's wrap this. So it's Seattle, Vegas, maybe somewhere in Europe, if Mexico decides to up their basketball rules to 1990s levels, maybe we'll go there. And then it's like Canada. Because what does a Canadian expansion even tell you anymore? Does that
Nothing.
Make the game any more global than it is today? And if I'm Mr. Clean, whatever, like I'm like, yeah, no, I'm gonna go to Europe.
If you're Mr. Clean, can you imagine how much? How much Matt and Leo would complain about coming home? Oh, they're coming home the second time, but back to back. You know, they were just in London. You can't expect the Raptors to make any open threes or play defense. It's just not possible.
Yeah. People make such a big deal about the travel. I've never been on a private jet ever before, but maybe somebody who has can comment. But it does stop 5 hours of being on a private jet. Is that like a half hour flight for commercial? Like, is that a good? Is that the same level of tiredness you get? I don't know. I'm trying to figure. I'm trying to create like a mapping between the two.
I think honestly, the real struggle is not necessarily how long the flights are, but just like how late you're getting in, because they're always red eye flights. Like, if you're always taking red-eye flights, like, I could see that fucking with you, but for the most part,
elevation's not supposed to be good for, like, a sore body, I guess. But also, like, everything they do looks like luxury to us, so I don't know how to empathize, really.
That's true.
But Jack knows, so at least he's got that.
Yeah. Well, I think that does for the podcast.
Hey, I think we got to mention the transition we're doing on the podcast.
That's
man.
Correct.
It's a massive... massive thing. So, Will, man, what's happening with you? Just tell the audience.
I honestly still can't say specifically, but tomorrow morning on Twitter I will announce where I'm going. But this will be, at least for the foreseeable future, the last one of these that I host. I've already said thank you on the reaction podcast of the Pistons game, but I'll just repeat it here. Like, RR is the, seriously, it's like, it's in terms of just how you build a business and how, in terms of how you build a publication, like, guys have given people a lot of chances. You know, Zerar, when you gave me that Yeti Blue mic like 3-4 years ago, it changed my life. I mean, it sounds fucking corny about a microphone, but I think it was really that powerful. And I was looking back actually through the archives, and the first time I hosted this podcast, the weekly pod, was number 301. Now, I'm not sure if the numbering is actually correct. But
the number is correct.
It is correct. Okay. Well, we're on podcast number 973. And there's been a lot of other pods in between, but, this is giving me a big platform to do what I do. And it's helped me transition to the next thing, which again, I'll have to announce tomorrow. So I can't say specifically now, but, I just want to thank you guys for giving me that chance. And, congratulate Sam for taking over the podcast.
Yeah, so I mean, Will's obviously been. I mean, Will can work wherever he wants to work, but I think he'll always be part of Rapper's Republic, and it's exciting to see like another RR graduate kind of moving on and doing something big and something they really enjoy. So it's going to be great. And Will, like, you've obviously been just not just the podcast or whatever, but overall, man, over the years, just like stepping in and like people can't make a pose. Will always comes in, saves the day, like just helpful to everybody and. Just a good fucking dude to have on the team. And, like, I think that's the part that we're going to miss the most. Your content obviously is second to none. It's amazing and it's always been great, but it's just having you on the group chat, and you'll still stay on the group chat, by the way. That's going to be the big miss. And so programming note on that, I mean, Sam's going to take over the, Raptors Weekly and the Reaction Podcast, I'll also try to help out with Raptors Weekly where I can, and also I'll try to host I'll try to bring back Raptors Weekly Extra, which I promised to do earlier in the year, but I failed to do that. But this time maybe I'll follow through on that one. So Will, man, big congratulations on your next move, and we're really excited to see you.
Thanks, man. It means a lot.
Congrats. This was the first sports podcast I ever listened to. It was before Jalen and Jacoby. Deadass. Your voice was the first one.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm only 13 years old, so that's why.
just a lonely 13 year old playing pickup basketball in Mexico City. No.
But you live in Mexico City. You live where? You live somewhere?
I'm on the coast. I'm in Puerto Vallarta.
Oh shit. Yeah. All right, I'm sorry.
Constant vacation, dude.
What's that?
Constant vacation.
Yeah, that's the wave. It's actually crazy here, man.
Wow.
Right, we'll wrap it up one last time.
Yeah, I think, that does it for the podcast, for Zerar and for Sam, for myself. Thanks for listening.
Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically. Dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply.